CliffCentral.com. In the roaring arc of his I Have a Dream speech, Dr. Martin Luther King lamented, "I look to a day when people will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character." This iconic line in the I Have a Dream speech was delivered 55 years ago, over a decade before I was born. Before you put this podcast off thinking, "Oh no, another race podcast," you may be surprised by the tone and texture of the interview I plan to share. So stay locked. Welcome back to the Brain and Brand Show. I am your host, Timothy Maurice, and this is the show, exploring the link between brain power and brand influence. This show is about how to thrive as an out-group member or know when to leave to join an in-group. Out-groups are when the bulk of the people around you don't look like you, and of course, in-groups are when you feel you are amongst and part of a community. In Cape Town, South Africa, a city in the professional community of lawyers, chartered accountants, etc., if you are black, you will be the minority. You'll be an out-group member. And some of this is due to history and biases. We know the story. And will simply take time and effort on everyone's side to rebalance. Until the numbers reflect the demographics in society, there will be frustrations, particularly amongst out-group members. Recently, Tanico Ngwenya, a chartered accountant, penned a letter about why she is leaving Cape Town to go back to Johannesburg. And for those listening outside South Africa with no knowledge of this, Ngwenya's letter went viral and even made it to headlining a top newspaper. Essentially, Ngwenya says she left Cape Town because she wanted to be around professionals who look like her, sound like her, and can pronounce her name, where there is a baseline appreciation for who she is as a human being and not have to deal with the onslaught of microaggressions due to being black in Cape Town, where she highlights shouldn't be the case because she is in Africa, her country, her continent. No one should judge her for making this decision. She has a right, and because I have worked on a project with her, I know just how delightful and professional and at the top of her game she is, and how she deserves to be in a place where she has a peace of mind, and I wish her the best. However, I wanted to hear from the other side. I wanted to hear from a black professional who has chosen to stay in Cape Town, to be part of the rebalancing, and hear how they are doing it. So I caught up with Sibusiso Khumalo, a marketing executive at one of the most innovative banks in South Africa, who happens to be based in Cape Town. Let's hear how he thrives and is embracing the challenge. So you seem to have managed the ability to stay on top of the game. I follow you on Instagram, and your Instagram posts, you seem encouraging and moving forward. How do you stay ahead of the curve and on top of your game?
Thank you. So I think it's me constantly challenging myself, constantly saying, you know, unless you're growing, unless you're developing constantly, I always need to look at what is the best thing that I did last and how can I do better than that? Because if I look at biology, if I look at the human body or anything, your cells are developing, and the minute that stops, you're kind of like dying. So for me, I'm constantly searching because I know that my last win is past, and the world is forever changing. The world is getting faster, it's getting, you know, better, it's getting easier and everything, and I can't slow down. So even if, and I'm inspired by people like sports persons that go out, win the Olympics, but they're out training the next day. So if they can do it, what makes me think that I could have a great year in my company and just relax and keep riding? Because I think one of the things on Instagram I've posted before is that I used to bees don't make any honey. Because if I don't want to fall into the trap of always talking about I used to be, I remember back in the day, I used to have this kind of car, damn, you know, I was doing so good. All I want to do is keep saying, you know what, this is where I'm going. Not just living my life looking in the mirror, rearview mirror, and looking at what was and how it was so nice and everything, because then I get lost in that kind of drama. So how do I do that? First of all, it's understanding that, you know, I'm always searching for greatness, and success is always a work in progress for me. And whatever it is, I kind of like have the belief now that the human will and success, just like, you know, there was a time in my life when I was really down and out and I thought I cannot get lower than this, and I went even lower. So when I get to a place that is like a high, I have to believe that, wait a minute, I can get higher than this. And I keep trying and I keep trying and I keep pushing myself. So it's not easy. They're good days, they're bad days. But all in all, I always reflect and I always think back to say, I need to stay on top of my game. Because not only for me, but for those that are also looking at me.
You're in a very competitive space as sort of head of product marketing and so forth. But when you feel like giving up and you don't have any ideas flowing, what do you do to get the wheels flowing again?
So, you know, those are things that I have experienced from time to time. And there are times when I felt like even just being in the working environment where I'm at, that this is just too much for me. Maybe let me just throw in the towel. Let me find something else. Or, you know, there's just too much pressure, or I can't deal with this environment, or I'm in the Western Cape. Maybe I just want to be in a place where I can see more black people, maybe go to a restaurant and there are more black people and everything. And, you know, what has really helped me is this concept of being selfless. That sometimes, you know, what you're doing is larger than who you are. You know what I mean? So how would me giving up affect someone else who draws energy from where I am in my career and in my life and being here? So I think, as a brand, as a leader and a person who wants to inspire and influence, what I want to do is to look at how what I do not only impacts me but impacts others. And sometimes it's even asking people. So I've asked people, how am I a value to your life? Because that's what inspires me to continue doing what I'm doing. Because if I never had that feedback, then I wouldn't really be confident that what I'm doing is actually making a difference. And the days when I have my lows and I feel like, you know, I think it's time for me to throw in the towel, then I probably would. So for me, staying in touch with everything else, because my success is not because of me. It's because of everybody that has contributed to that. It's not just my making. I'm not this great human being that is kind of like is just so made and everything. But a lot of people around me. I am the seed, but it was only when I was put in certain contexts was I able to germinate and produce. Without that, then I'm just the seed.
You know, being in a context which is in Cape Town, which is largely non-black, you know, you find yourself in a situation where you've been able to thrive in that space. You've been able to sort of inspire people to believe in you, to want to get behind you and rally behind you. How did you do it? Because a lot of people are giving up. There's been articles out recently where people just literally leave. What do you do to get people to believe in you when they don't look like you?
So firstly, I believe that there is a Buster Douglas in every single one of us. You just have to be resilient. And if you can get through 6 rounds fighting Mike Tyson, then maybe he's going to be tired.
So a Buster Douglas, just paint the picture. You know, a Buster Douglas in each one of us. Is it an underdog or what?
So Buster Douglas is the first guy to actually defeat Mike Tyson. And the way in which he got to defeat Mike Tyson, remember Mike Tyson used to kind of like knock people out in the first round. So Buster Douglas was like resilient and actually got through to like 5 rounds. And in the 6th round, Mike Tyson got tired. And unbeknown to Mike Tyson and everybody else, that he never had the endurance. So he was one of those fighters that got into the ring and within the first 2 rounds knocked you out. And that's how he won every single match until Buster Douglas came through. And he was able to hold on. And when he held on, Mike Tyson got tired and he beat him up. But the most important thing is that after that happened, than everybody else that Mike Tyson fought knew how to, you know, kind of like defeat Mike Tyson. And I think that almost like sums up the way Mike Tyson's career ended, the turning point. So for me, you have to be resilient. You're in an environment, when you were born, you're born into a hostile environment. You came out of a womb that was warm and it was, you know, so nice, it was dark, and you came into this new environment that was very hostile. But you were resilient enough to be able to kind of like persevere. So if I ask you the question to say, if you, anyone or any mother or father or any parent who's got a child, is every child learns how to walk. And the question is, how long should a child learn how to walk? So a parent will always say, my child will learn how to walk until they can walk. So if I have the attitude of, I will keep doing this until, and until becomes an important thing for me. So until I get it right, I'm not going to stop. I'm going to keep doing it. And I think that sums up what I mean when I say you have to be resilient, and you have to understand that I am. And you know, a hostile environment creates greatness. Diamonds are created under pressure. So you cannot, you will not always be in an environment that is kind of like accepting, but you need to be able to build the resilience, but also be able to have the confidence. And it's much harder to do it than to say it.
Just, this is important. I want to just stop you there quickly. So do you feel, though, that being in Cape Town amongst people who don't look like you, where there's potential sort of biases coming at you, have you took that as, I'm going to use that to make myself a diamond? Has that been your process?
Most definitely. So the fact that I am here, that we should see it as an opportunity. We shouldn't see it as something that is limiting, because we are interdependent. So my organization or Cape Town is dependent on me, because if you look at that whole concept of, you know, darkness is the absence of light and not the opposite of light. So I am black because someone else is white. It's not, you know, so I create the white person, you know, so I am part of the process of creating this. So once I understood that I am a part of the creation of whatever the system that is there, then I got to look at things differently. And when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change.
So for a young professional coming to Cape Town who is a black professional, I want to speak to two different people quickly. I want to speak to the white professional who's in Cape Town, and I want to speak to the young black professional coming to Cape Town. What advice would you have for both of them about creating a rich environment where both can thrive?
I think I'll start with the white professional. I think the white professional, just like any professional, should understand that there's strength in diversity. That the more diverse you have, the stronger you are. And that there's a lot that they can contribute, but there's a hell of a lot that blacks can also contribute. And in order to take this city forward to the next level, I think we need to start talking about inclusiveness and acceptance, and starting to understand and making the effort to, we can't just go into Khayelitsha on an excursion and get the shock and then get back to your wine farm and continue sipping your wine. You're going to have to say, how can I be part of making the change or creating the change that I want to see in this environment? So, and these are touchy subjects. They're extremely touchy subjects. It's not easy, but we have to confront it. I think that once we have a good, rigorous debate and conflict around this, we can be able to emerge with something good. For a black person who's coming into the Western Cape, I cannot honestly say it's going to be easy. I'm not going to say it's going to be, you know, a walk in the park. Yes, you can have a fantastic views, fantastic lifestyle and everything, but there is still quite a lot in terms of a divide. There's a lot of things that are just not going to, you know, sit right. Whether you're going to go out, you're not going to feel like you belong. Sometimes you will feel, because yes, you are economically a minority. In terms of the numbers, there could be equal number of blacks and whites, but, you know, most blacks are living in poverty in a place that is not so far from the wealthiest. We have the highest elasticity rate in the world. So what brings you here, and how do you want to contribute, and what impact do you want to leave behind? And if you can answer those questions for yourself, you will be able to, regardless of whether you're in Cape Town or anywhere else in the world, if you understand your why, and if your why is much larger and clearer, then until you've achieved that, I think you'll be constantly, relentlessly trying to pursue that thing. So
quickly, I want to ask you quickly, and this is my last question to you. When people get your name wrong, they say it wrong. Like, I'm getting better, but I know I still mess up people's name, and I infuriate people at times. When you feel infuriated, or maybe you don't feel infuriated, but if somebody gets your name wrong, what do you do? That's the one question. And then the second part of this question is, what would you tell this young black person to do specifically to integrate themselves so that they don't feel lonely in this society?
So it's a touchy thing, because I think that if I was to even go to some places on the African continent, I'll get people's names wrong. And even if I go to some places in the rest of the world, even within white cultures, I might get some names wrong, because we are not of the same dialect. And I think it is more sensitive for us here, is because we have a sense of we sense that the other is not trying hard enough to try to understand the other. And I think that's one way to look at it, that you cannot pronounce my name, but why not? I can pronounce yours. Why can't you pronounce mine? And we'll always have this topic. But, you know, accepting diversity is not a one-way street. It's both ways. And how can I be able to bring that person? Because there's something behind a name. Who gave you that name? What does it mean? And what do I do to bring that person into my confidence and get them to understand it? And it's not so much the pronunciation of the name, but sometimes you introduce yourself a number of times to the person, but they're just not, the name is not latching. But it's not latching because, one, they have a blockage of pronouncing it, and they just never try, so they never even get to know. But how can we play a role in educating each other? How can I educate Sbusiso? What does that mean? How did I get the name? Who gave it to me? And, you know, let me take this person to a journey into understanding me and what that means, and the pride and joy I have from that. Because then they might have a better understanding and a better appreciation for me and what my brand and what my name and everything else means. But it's natural. People get upset. I have had people rename me other things. And sometimes I'll be a little down, and sometimes I think to myself, okay, let me actually try. And sometimes we do work harder. I think we naturally extend ourselves. I feel like I extend myself more than, let's say, my white colleagues or my white friends would to my race. But that's what makes me unique. That's what I celebrate, the fact that we are compassionate, the fact that we're forgiving, the fact that we're all-encompassing, and we can share our home and our land with someone that actually came here as a visitor and then changed the, you know, kind of like the narrative of our story. So to me, those are the things that I look at and I say, are these characteristics that I hold highly and I'm proud of, and are a source of what makes me the larger person? the bigger person or the bigger character or whatever it is. Yeah.
And then in terms of some specific things a young professional can do to integrate them into the society, what can they do to thrive at a level where people are, you know, they get them, they vibe in together, they enjoy themselves, they're invited into spaces where people don't look like them? What do you think?
I think just be the person and do the things that you're expecting as well. So to me, you can come in as a black person and you can live in an area where there aren't any other black person and you don't actually integrate. So, you know, if most black people are in gigs, also visit gigs, also understand, because remember, it's not just about being black in Cape Town, but it's about, on one hand, being black in Cape Town, but also being a Cape Townian black in Cape Town. You know what I mean? So understand their struggles. How do they? There are people that I know, I've got cousins in Gugulethu that have never been to the waterfront. They just don't even consider it as a destination, or even Blowbook. They've never seen the ocean that side. So how can you come in and really engraft yourself into the city and not be a observer of the city and a critic of the city, but actually be part of, you know, the city itself, and do that and have white friends and invite them over, and have black friends and invite them over, and mix and match, and just, you know, it's not going to be easy. If I go to China, I'm going to see a lot of Chinese people. You know, if you're in Cape Town, you're going to see a lot of white people, because there's a lot more white people in Cape Town than other places of the country. So that's how it is. But how can we make a difference, lead from where we are with what we have? And how can we, you know, it's that story of the starfish. You know, take one starfish, throw it back in the ocean, you've made a difference.
Thank you for joining us on the Brain and Brand Show.
Thank you very much.
We will all be an outsider at some point. Whether you're invited to a friend's wedding and you're the only white person, or you find yourself in India and you're the only person with your hair color and texture, or you are launching a division of your company in Russia and you're struggling to learn Russian, whether you decide to stay or leave is completely up to you. There are fine professionals on both sides. There are horrible professionals on both sides. Staying and leaving is a choice. Thanks, Bosiso, and all the best to Tanico. Hope you are both happy with your decisions. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week with the next episode. Make sure you rate us and comment so others can find us, and email me your thoughts, podcast@timothymaurice.com. CliffCentral.com